Om Jnanadhimadannasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Dhena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah.
Vyasadev, Mantramurtim Amurtikam, he said that the form of the Lord is very difficult to behold, but if you chant the mantra, then it becomes very easy. And the form of the Lord is transported through the mantra, so are his qualities, his pastimes. And all knowledge, everything that's in Krishna, which is everything, is complete there in the holy name. So no wonder that people have this response when they hear the holy name, because it's all at once exotic and mysterious at the same time. And the devotees who go out to chant Hare Krishna, and chanting Hare Krishna includes distributing written kirtan, because kirtan is always also written down. And then when it's distributed, there's a way in which people can take it home. And then it has the after effect. After they hear the holy name chanted on the street, they take the book home and it speaks to them personally. Every word, every line is actually meant to instruct them how to go back to Godhead, because Krishna has a personal interest in every living entity in this world. And that's why he writes the Vedic literature, Anartopasanam Sakshad Bhakti Yogam Adhoksaje Lokasya Ajanato Vidvams Chakre Satvata Samhitam. The Lord in his Shaktivesh incarnation, Srila Vyasadeva, wrote down the Vedas, and especially the Bhagavatam, which is the ripened fruit of all the Vedas, specifically so that living entities could revive their intimate personal relationship with Krishna. So in distributing the written kirtan and singing the kirtan so that people can hear it, deliberately going to where there's more people and positioning ourselves in such a way that they hear it, in parentheses, they have to hear it, with in italics, have to. The devotees also vicariously appreciate the experience of finding Krishna for the first time over and over again. The experience of discovering that actually one is not part of this world and is eternal is such a great relief. It can hardly be described. Because the burden of being a temporary entity, when in fact we're not, we're eternal entities, is so crushing that one has to actually go into a kind of trance to forget about it. That's what material life is. It's sort of a trance in which we try to appease our senses and our mind and our sense of longing for something eternal by taking one new material object after another, appearing to be shiny and new, but actually it's simply the same recycled energy over and over again. It's never satisfying. And therefore, the living entity has to go into a kind of a stupor in order to tolerate the impermanence of this world. However, when somebody hears the holy name, inherently within the holy name is the freshness of Krishna in the spiritual world, which is practically indescribable and is newer and newer at every moment. And there's an experience of a hungry man eating food and being nourished. And the experience is palpable for the person experiencing it and also for those distributing it. There's one can observe in those recipients the nourishment that they're receiving. And in that, the devotees who preach become constantly reinvigorated to take the holy name themselves, seeing its effect on others. And it especially helps to see the effect in others by studying the Shastra and understanding the exalted nature of the holy name and the exalted activity of distributing it, which is lauded by the Lord himself, and who says that those who distribute the written kirtan and distribute the kirtan through singing are the most dear to me in this world. What kind of situation is that? And in fact, even if someone is an insignificant living entity, practically living entities are insignificant in a sense, but especially those from the point of view of being shara or fallible, having succumbed to the wiles of Maya and who are dancing in the material world according to the shadows she's casting upon the world. Those, even those who are born in a disadvantaged situation, who somehow or other take to the chanting Hare Krishna and then the distribution of it in its spoken and then written form, can practically overnight become recognized as great devotees. And Prabhupada mentioned this by saying that sometimes during wartime, an insignificant farm boy from the Midwest of America would join the military. This person was born into obscurity and is destined for obscurity. However, somehow or other, a recruiter comes by and says, "Why don't you join the military, son? You'll be a hero." So he does, and he gets put in the infantry because of his lack of qualifications. That's where they put people generally, on the front lines. And they're the first to get blown up, and nobody seems to care that much. So he goes on the front lines, and then by inspiration one day, during the heat of battle, he performs a heroic act, and he saves some fellow soldier from the fierce attack of the enemy, and saves his life, and everyone sees it. And then he's given a medal, and then he comes back to his Midwest home that no one's ever heard of, population 13, and there's a fanfare, and then his name goes in the national newspaper, and then he becomes famous everywhere, overnight. And so Prabhupada compared that to the American boys and girls at one time when, in 1975, they were going out to distribute books and undergoing so much. There were obstacles. And Prabhupada wrote this, that you would become famous and recognized by the Lord practically immediately by this activity. So all at once, the Harinam Sankirtan, Lord Chaitanya says, Param Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtana. If you want victory, victory over the senses, victory over birth and death, victory over the obstacles that keep one from going back to Goloka Vrindavan, take to the Sankirtan. And you'll become a great hero. You'll become famous as one who left this world and went back home, back to Godhead. You'll be recognized by the great acharyas who have given their lives to make sure that this Sankirtan movement gets propagated. And if you become their instruments, then you're recognized by them. And there's what could be better than that? So in that activity of going out to the streets of San Francisco, all of this becomes possible and is the fate of those who go out to distribute transcendental knowledge and who assist in the process in any way. And that's what our mission is, really. And there's nothing so satisfying as performing yajna, because human life is meant for tapasya. It's actually the wealth of the intelligent, tapasya. There's no happiness in sense indulgence. It leads to suffering. But in tapasya, especially divine tapasya, tapo divyam, there is a growing sense of happiness. And the juncture at which one realizes that is when one begins to advance in spiritual life, that actually my real wealth lies in spiritual tapasya. And then one becomes greedy for it, that one wants to perform more and more activities, sacrifice more and more for the sake of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Sankirtan movement. Then one begins to get some traction in spiritual life and move forward. This is nishta, or a very steady position. Before that, one may grapple with one's mind and senses and think that maybe I'll try to avoid tapasya and try to be comfortable in this world. So Sankirtan gives an opportunity for everyone to come to this nishta stage, because there's so much satisfaction in the tapasya of performing Sankirtan by distributing the written kirtan and chanting Hare Krishna in public, that devotees take it as a big party. It just seems like a big fun picnic party. But at the same time, it's the greatest of all activities. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's contribution in Kali Yuga. Contribution is an understatement of the millennium, that he gave this process that Lochan Das Thakur said is simply joyful. Kevala Ananda Kanda. It's simply joyful. It just looks like a big picnic party. But actually, it's the greatest tapasya that one could perform. So intelligent people, says Karabhajana Muni in the Srimad Bhagavatam, they take to this Sankirtan tapasya, this yajna of performing Sankirtan anywhere and everywhere and as much as possible. I saw pictures from Damodar Vamsidhari. Apparently he went on some, took a hiatus for a week with his family, drove down to Mexico, but he couldn't stop doing Sankirtan. He was sending pictures back. It wasn't that devotees tried to take a break, but they can't stop doing Sankirtan. He sent pictures back down in Mexico, you know, with arms around a couple of, you know, the locals with Bhagavad Gitas in their hands and so forth. And everywhere he was going, he was singing Hare Krishna and so forth. So this is the plight of those who become captured by Lord Chaitanya's loving network, that they become so absorbed in this Sankirtan yajna and tapasya, they can't stop doing it under any circumstances. It's actually addicting. Ramananda Sakha.
I have a question. What is the difference between austerity and penance? Is there any difference?
You'd have to look them up and see. You can look it up. There's some subtle difference, which you could just say the translation, the definitions. Quick. Jaldi, jaldi.
Got it?
What do you have?
I have austerity.
Okay, let's hear austerity and he'll do penance. We could do a play. Your austerity, your penance.
Austere quality, severity of manner, life, etc. Sternness. Two is ascetic practices, austerities of monastery life. And three is strict economy. And penance is punishment undergone in token of penitence for sin, a penitential discipline imposed by church authority.
Okay, so what was the root of the austerity and penance? Tell penance first.
Yeah, so penance, the origin is Middle English, 2050 to 1300. Penuance, Anglo-French, Old French, penience. Latin is penitentia or penitence.
It's like a prayaschitta. And austerity is more of a, you know, strictness in the way one lives.
When tapasya, when the Sanskrit for tapasya is translated in English, it appears to me that many times the penance is used as a translation.
Sorry, it's very subtle. So there's a sense in which I've fallen into the material world. I've been overcome by material desires, by following the senses, and now some kind of penance or austerity. You can use either one practically. If you go deeply into the subtle meanings, you might distinguish between the two. But basically, they mean the same things, restraining the senses for the sake of getting a higher taste. But if you look at it more carefully, penance is a kind of prayaschitta for some specific reformation. Penitentiary is really meant for people to go and reform themselves by being in a little more controlled environment than they're used to. In any case, tapasya is something Lord Brahma, when he was trying to figure out who he was, where he was, what the universe was, the Lord spoke to him these two syllables, tapa, which means tapasya. He's very intelligent, so he figured it out. He just heard the word, and inherited in the word was the meaning, and then he understood he had to do some kind of penance or austerity to understand the truth. So he did. So there's value in that. Not tapasya for its own sake, but we perform tapasya for the sake of serving Krishna. And when we do that, then there's a way that we remember Krishna, we feel Krishna's connection. All good things come from that. But especially taking the time and energy to promote the Sankirtan movement. And whatever kind of sense control and is required for that is the best kind of tapasya. Now today we're going to hear a whole chapter of the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is called The Opulence and Sweetness of Lord Krishna. And this comes as a section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita in which Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is personally teaching Sanatan Goswami about Krishna and the process of devotional service. So we'll try to get through the whole thing by 10 o'clock. I'm going to mostly read right through with very few comments, but who knows what might happen, we'll see. But the intention is to get through all 149 verses by the end of the class, and we can just hear it, because this whole chapter is so... It's a very necessary information to hear in order for one to enthusiastically perform devotional service. Why? Because we must know the goal, where we're going. We have to hear about it. We also have to hear about the specific qualities of Krishna as a person. Otherwise, our love for him does not awaken. And the problem is, in many religious processes, they have a conception of God as a supreme controller or punisher and so forth, but they don't understand his actual personality. In fact, oftentimes I've been handed tracts from various religious sects, and on them they'll have a picture of God sitting on a throne, but then when it comes to actually seeing God, there's no form. It's just an effulgence. It's actually no person. People are lacking information about the personality of Godhead, and therefore, although there's a sense that he should be a person, they hesitate to go that far to describe him. In fact, in some religious traditions, it's taboo to even talk about God having form or a name and so forth. In fact, in some places, they smash the... images of God wherever they see them. I remember more than several years ago, the Taliban, who have now become infamous all over the world, were searching out ancient deities of Buddha, and they would nuke them, basically. They'd use their high-powered weapons, probably developed in America here in Silicon Valley, and they would shoot them and just blast it into powder, these deities, just because there's this sense that if you describe a form of God, then it's blasphemy and so forth. This is all a great obstacle for actually developing love for God and going back to Godhead, because you can't love the sky. You can't love something amorphous. We love persons. We love the quality of persons. And all those persons that we love are actually reflections and are derivatives of the original qualities of Krishna. So by hearing about Krishna's specific qualities and as a person, one can actually, one's mind has something to catch on to. And that's what will happen today. Now that everyone's in a completely receptive mood after performing the Sankirtan Yajna yesterday, from those who cooked to those who chanted, everyone who was involved is implicated in this, in the loving network of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, will be receptive to hearing this. Or those who have tuned in online will be receptive because they've taken the time to turn their attention in this way. We welcome you, those who are online this morning. And anyone who's here attending the live class in the as part of the studio audience will also be able to take advantage of this fully because they've moved themselves from point A to point B and put themselves in front of transcendental sound. And that's at least half of the process of advancing to the goal is simply be there. Chapter 21 from the Madhya Lila of the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. The opulence and sweetness of Lord Krishna. Are you all ready?
Yes.
Okay. By the way, the text-in number is 650-245-7018. If you're watching online and you'd like to text a message in, 650-245-7018. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur summarizes the 21st chapter as follows. In this chapter, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fully describes Krishna Loka, the spiritual sky, the causal ocean, and the material world, which consists of innumerable universes. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then describes Lord Brahma's interview with Krishna at Dwarka and the Lord's curbing the pride of Brahma. There's also a description of one of Krishna's pastimes with Brahma. In this chapter, the author of the Chaitanya Charitamrita has presented some nice poems about the pastimes of Krishna and Krishna's super excellent beauty. His super excellent what?
Beauty.
Throughout the rest of the chapter, our intimate relationship, sambandha, with Krishna is described. Text 1. Agatyeka gatim natva hinartha dikasadakam shri chaitanyam dikamyasya madhuryaishvarya shikaram. Offering my obeisances under Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, let me describe a particle of his opulence and sweetness. He is most valuable for a fallen, conditioned soul, bereft of spiritual knowledge, and he is the only shelter for those who do not know the real goal of life. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. All glories to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all glories to Nityananda Prabhu, all glories to Advaita Acharya, and all glories to all the devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Swarup Swarupena Dham Parabhyom Dhame Pratak Pratak Vaikuntha Shab Nahika Ganane. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, all the transcendental forms of the Lord are situated in the spiritual sky. They preside over spiritual planets in that abode, but there is no counting these Vaikuntha planets. How many Vaikuntha planets are there? 4. Shata sahasra ayut laka koti yojana ek eka Vaikunthera vishtara barana. The breadth of each Vaikuntha planet is described as 8 miles multiplied by 100, by 1,000, by 10,000, by 100,000, and by 10 million. In other words, each Vaikuntha planet is expanded beyond our capacity to measure. Shab Vaikuntha Vyapaka Ananda Chinmoy Parishad Shadaishvarya Purna Shubhoy. Each Vaikuntha planet is very large, and each is made of spiritual bliss. The inhabitants are all associates of the Supreme Lord, and they have full opulence, like the Lord himself. This is how the Vaikuntha planets are all situated. Ananta Vaikuntha ak ak dheshi jar, she parabhyome dharmera ke karu bishtar. Since all the Vaikuntha planets are located in a certain corner of the spiritual sky, who can measure the spiritual sky? 7. The shape of the spiritual sky is compared to a lotus flower. Who can corroborate that but with a shloka from the Sri Brahma Samhita without looking? Sahasrapatra kamalam gokulakyam mahatparam tat karnikaram tadama taranam tamshasambhavam karnikaram mahajyantram shatkonam bhajakilakam sharanga chatpatistanam prakrita purushena cha premananda mahananda rasena vasitam hiyat jyoti rupena manuna kamabhijena samgatam. The topmost region of that flower is called the whorl. And within that whorl is Krishna's abode. The petals of the spiritual lotus flower consist of many Vaikuntha planets. So we're clear, right? The spiritual world is compared to a lotus flower. Has anybody seen a lotus flower live and in person? It's stunning, isn't it? It's mesmerizing. I saw some at the Botanical Gardens in Osaka recently. I saw them first in season I was there in the autumn, and they weren't blooming. Only one was blooming out of hundreds. And then I went back in May, I think, this year, and they were all blooming. And I spent at least an hour or two just walking from one to the next, observing them because they're otherworldly. So the spiritual world is shaped like a lotus flower. 8. Each Vaikuntha planet is full of spiritual bliss, complete opulence and space, and each is inhabited by incarnations. If Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva cannot estimate the length and breadth of the spiritual sky and the Vaikuntha planets, how can ordinary living entities begin to imagine them? Now, as I'm reading this, please meditate on the fact that these words are being spoken by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself to Sanatana Goswami. You can envision this dialogue going on. O Supreme Great One, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, O Supersoul, Master of all mystic power, your pastimes are taking place continuously in these worlds, but who can estimate where, how, and when you are employing your spiritual energy and performing your pastimes? No one can understand the mystery of these activities. This verse is from the Srimad Bhagavatam 10:14-21. 10. E mato krishnera dibhyashat guna ananto Brahma Shiva Sanakari Napai Jar Anta. The spiritual qualities of Krishna are also unlimited. Great personalities like Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and the four Kumaras cannot estimate the spiritual qualities of the Lord. 11. In time, great scientists may be able to count all the atoms of the universe, all the stars and planets in the sky, and all the particles of snow, but who among them can count the unlimited transcendental qualities of the Supreme Godhead? He descends on the surface of the globe for the benefit of all living entities. Mukharvin, go get me 10:14-7, please. I'll read you this purport because it's a famous verse. In fact, all the verses in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto, well, many of them are famous, but all of them are vitally important. Of course, all the verses of the Bhagavatam are vitally important, but for Gaudiya Vaishnavas and understanding Gaudiya Vaishnav Siddhanta, chapter 14 is particularly important. And this verse talks about Krishna's qualities and how they're uncountable, that even if a scientist we're able to calculate through some really big computer. Here's the purport to the verse. Srila Sanatan Goswami explains that Lord Krishna is Gunatma, the soul of all spiritual superior qualities, because he gives them life. For example, one may discuss in an abstract way such qualities as generosity, intelligence, and mercy, but they come to life only when a living person exhibits them. Thus, Lord Krishna is Gunatma, because he descends to the material world and reestablishes religious principles by exhibiting all godly qualities himself and inspiring them in others. What was the point? The first point? Yeah, what is this point, Gunatma? It's an important point.
And establishes the principles of religion.
Why is that important, according to what we just read? You can theoretically talk about generosity, mercy, and so forth, but until you actually see, but when you see them manifest in a person, then you experience them as a real principle. There's a feeling that you get. Yes.
We get an opportunity to follow it because we see it. When we read about it and we don't experience it, then it's like honey in a jar that you cannot taste. But when you see it manifest, especially in the Lord, where it's pure and fully saturated, it gives us an opportunity to see it in its best form and then to imbibe and aspire for it.
Yeah, so there's these ideas. You have something?
Yeah, one more thing. It's our faith gets strengthened when we see something. Our senses are involved in.
It's palpable. When you meet someone who embodies a certain quality and you feel it for yourself. For instance, how can you calculate what is mercy until someone actually gives you mercy? That is, you didn't deserve it, but they gave you kindness anyway. They gave you an abundance of kindness even though you were the most undeserving person. How does that make you feel? Pretty lousy, right? No, I mean, there's a way in which when it actually comes to you through someone, then you experience the quality and you can see that it's fathomless. It's something very deep and it changes your life, actually. It changes your life. When you hear about it, theoretically, it may not change your life, but when you actually experience it, for instance, when someone meets a person who is very advanced spiritually, they may have read all about spiritual life, but when they meet somebody who embodies the qualities they've read about, then somehow they're moved themselves to take up spiritual life. They see their ideal, and they can experience the qualities that somebody's actually imbibed. And as you said, their faith was it you just said the faith increases because they see it's practicable, practical. So Gunatma, this is a very important point that these things are real. Spiritual life is real and it's experienced through personal contact. Srila Sanatan Goswami explains that Lord Krishna is Gunatma, the soul of all superior qualities, because he gives them life. For example, one may discuss in an abstract way such qualities as generosity, intelligence, and mercy, but they come to life only when a living person exhibits them. Thus, Lord Krishna is Gunatma because he descends to the material world and reestablishes religious principles by exhibiting all godly qualities himself and inspiring them in others. Who's someone that he inspired? Lord Krishna personally inspired. Arjuna, who else? Uddhava, who else? Kunti, Yudhishthira, Muchukunda. He is very inspired. A living entity who develops the transcendental qualities found in the Lord receives immeasurable benefit. and eventually goes with the Lord back to his own abode, where all living beings are liberated and fully endowed with the transcendental nature. Listen to this. A living entity who develops the transcendental quality found in the Lord receives immeasurable benefit and eventually goes with the Lord back to his own abode. Fire associates with fire. I mean, you have to be fire to enter into fire without getting burnt. So one has to develop the qualities of the Lord. How do you do that? By his association. Saparya gachchukram akayamavranam asnaviram shudham apapavidam kavir manishi pariyabhu swayambur yatatyatyator tanviradashas patibhya samabhya. The Lord is the supreme pure, and those who associate with him, they also become pure. And this is practical. It's not that we hear about spiritual life and it remains theoretical and I remain attached to the lower tastes of the material world, but actually I should experience and see in myself that I'm really developing higher qualities, and they're becoming manifest in me by the Lord's mercy, that I'm able to control my senses and I'm more attracted to hearing and chanting than anything else. My mind starts going to the kirtan and to hearing about Krishna. These are practical signs that we're becoming purified, and we must have that. Srila Sanatana Goswami further explains that the Lord manifests a specific spiritual quality. Listen to this. I'll start over because it's so important. Srila Sanatana Goswami further explains that the Lord manifests a specific spiritual quality for the benefit of each living entity. Since there are innumerable living entities within the confines of the material creation, the Lord manifests infinite qualities. Thus, every conditioned soul can appreciate the Supreme Lord in a particular way. The example is given here that even if the most learned scholars could someday count the particles of earth, snow, and light, they would still fail to understand the qualities of the Lord. In this example, earth, snow, and light are progressively more subtle. Thus, it is to be understood that there is an increasing difficulty in counting their virtually infinite particles. According to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, great personalities like Shankarshan actually have counted the numbers of atoms on the earth, and even the molecules in the entire universe. Yet even such a personality as Sankarsana, who has been continuously chanting the glories of the Lord since time immemorial, has not even approached a final count of those glories. Lord Krishna exhibits his most astonishing qualities during his childhood pastimes in Vrindavan, where he steals butter from the cowherd ladies, dances with his girlfriends, and plays with his cowherd boyfriends as their most dear companion. Although appearing like ordinary human activities, such sublime pastimes embody Lord Krishna's innumerable and immeasurable, beautiful, transcendental qualities, which are the life and soul of the pure devotees. Move on. Don't worry if some of this seems too esoteric or beyond reach. Just keep hearing. Just keep hearing. Brahmadi rahu sahasravarane ananto dirantaro ghai mukhe na pai gunera anto. To say nothing of Lord Brahma, even Lord Ananta, who has thousands of heads, cannot reach the end of the Lord's transcendental qualities, even though he is continuously chanting their praises. If I, Lord Brahma, and your elder brothers, the great saints and sages, cannot understand the limits of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is full of various energies, who else can understand them? Although constantly chanting about his transcendental qualities, the thousand-hooded Lord Ananta, Shesha, has not yet reached the end of the Lord's activities. This verse comes from the Bhagavatam 2.7.41. Text 14. To say nothing of Anantadev, even Lord Krishna himself cannot find an end to his own transcendental qualities. Indeed, he himself is always eager to know them. Text 15. My Lord, you are unlimited. Even the predominating deities of the higher planetary systems, including Lord Brahma, cannot find your limitations, nor can you yourself ascertain the limit of your qualities. Like atoms in the sky, there are multi-universes with seven coverings, and these are rotating in due course of time. All the experts in Vedic understanding are searching for you by eliminating the material elements. In this way, searching and searching, they cannot come to the conclusion. They come to the conclusion that everything is complete in you. Thus, you are the resort of everything. This is the conclusion of all Vedic experts. This is a great relief to come to the conclusion of the Vedas, Vedanta, which is that Krishna is everything. And just surrender your mind there. And then you'll be in the right place. Even if you consider that dogmatic, everyone's dogmatic. If you have the right dogma, you're okay. Purport. This verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 10:87:41, which was spoken by the personified Vedas, is confirmed by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. This is text 7:19. Bahunam jamanamante gyanavan mam prapadyate vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudurlabha. After many, many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. Even after searching for the absolute truth throughout the universe, learned scholars and Vedic experts cannot reach the ultimate goal. In this way, they come to Krishna. When there is a discussion about the absolute truth, there are always various pros and cons. The purpose of such arguments is to come to the right conclusion. Such an argument is generally known as neti-neti, not this, not that. Until one comes to the right conclusion, the process of thinking this is not the absolute truth, that is not the absolute truth, will continue. When we come to the right conclusion, we accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna as the ultimate truth. 16. Apart from all argument, logic, and negative or positive processes, when Lord Sri Krishna was present as the Supreme Personality of Godhead at Vrindavana, no one could find a limit to his potencies by studying his characteristics and activities. At Vrindavana, the Lord immediately created all material and spiritual planets in one moment. Indeed, all of them were created with their predominating deities. We do not hear of such wonderful things anywhere else. Simply by one's hearing of those incidents, one's consciousness is agitated and cleansed. What happens to one's consciousness? You could use that when you're talking, selling a book to someone. You could say, "But just by reading this, your consciousness will become agitated and cleansed." Purport. When Lord Krishna was present in the earthly Vrindavan, Lord Brahma, taking him to be an ordinary cowherd boy, wanted to test his potency. Therefore, Lord Brahma stole all the calves and cowherd boys from Krishna and hid them by his illusory energy. When Krishna saw that Brahma had stolen his calves and cowherd boys, he immediately created many material and spiritual planets in Lord Brahma's presence. Within a moment, cowherd boys, calves, and unlimited Vaikunthas, all expansions of the Lord's spiritual energy were manifested. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, Ananda Chinmaya Rasa Pratibhavitabhi. Not only did Krishna create all the paraphernalia of his spiritual energy, but he also created unlimited material universes with unlimited Brahmas. All these pastimes, which are described in Srimad Bhagavatam, will cleanse one's consciousness. In this way, one can actually understand the absolute truth. The spiritual planets and the spiritual sky are called Vaikunthas, and each of them has a predominating deity, Narayan, with a specific name. Similarly, in the material sky, there are innumerable universes, and each is dominated by a specific deity, a Brahma. Krishna simultaneously created all these Vaikuntha planets and universes within a moment after Brahma's return. The word avadhuta means rambling, agitating, moving, absorbed, defeated. In some readings of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said, Jahar Shravani Chitta Malo Hoya Dhuta. Instead of the word avadhuta, the word Hoya Dhuta, meaning that the heart is or consciousness is cleansed, are used. When the consciousness is cleansed, one can understand what and who Krishna is. This is confirmed by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Yesham tvantakatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvanva mohanir mukta bhajantimam jardavrataha. Persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, and whose sinful actions are completely eradicated, are freed from the dualities of delusion, and they engage themselves in my service with determination. Unless one is freed from the reactions of sinful activities, one cannot understand Krishna or engage in his transcendental loving service. Only 130 more verses to go. We're pretty much on track. According to Shukadeva Goswami, Krishna has unlimited calves and cowherd boys with him. No one could count their actual number. Each of the cowherd boys was tending calves to the extent of a koti, arbuda, shankha, and padma. That is the way of counting. Purport. According to Vedic mathematical calculations, the following enumeration system is used. Units, tens, dash, hundreds, shata, thousands, sahasra, ten thousands, ayuta, and hundreds of thousands, lako, in Bengali. 10 times laksha is niyuta. 10 times niyuta is koti. 10 times koti is arbuda. 10 times arbuda is vrinda. 10 times vrinda is karva. 10 times karva is nikarva. 10 times nikarva is shankha. 10 times shankha is padma. And 10 times padma is sagara. 10 times sagara is antya. And 10 times antya is madhya. And 10 times madhya is prarada. Each item is 10 times greater than the previous one. Thus, all the cowherd boys who were companions of Krishna had many calves to take care of. When people ask how much they should give, how much should I give for this? See, a prarada. A prarada of dollar bills, please. $100 bills. All the cowherd boys had unlimited calves. Similarly, their canes, flutes, lotus flowers, horns, garments, and ornaments were all unlimited. They cannot be limited by writing about them. The cowherd boys then became four-handed Narayans, predominating deities of Vaikuntha planets. All the separate Brahmas from different universes began to offer their prayers unto the lords. All these transcendental bodies emanated from the body of Krishna, and within a second they all entered again into his body. When Lord Brahma from this universe saw this pastime, he was astonished and struck with wonder. After offering prayers, he gave the following conclusion. Lord Brahma said, "If someone says that he knows everything about Krishna's opulence, let him think that way. But as far as I'm concerned, with my body and mind, I consider it in this way. My Lord, your opulence is like an unlimited ocean of nectar, and it is verbally and mentally impossible for me to realize even a drop of that ocean. There are people who say, I know everything about Krishna." You ever met one? Yeah. I've met people say, "No, I know everything." I know everything. "Let them think that way. As far as I'm concerned, I do not wish to speak very much about this matter. Oh, my Lord, let me say this much. As far as your opulences are concerned, they are all beyond the reach of my mind, body, and words." Purport. This is a quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.38, spoken by Lord Brahma after he had stolen Lord Krishna's calves and cowherd boys, and Krishna had exhibited his transcendental opulence by recreating all the stolen calves and cowherd boys by his Vishnumurti expansions. All he had, after he had seen this, Brahma offered the above prayer. 28. Let the glories of Lord Krishna be. Who could be aware of all of them? His abode, Vrindavan, has many wonderful opulences. Just try to see them all. According to the revelations of revealed scripture, Vrindavan extends only 16 kroshas, 32 miles. Nonetheless, all the Vaikuntha planets and innumerable universes are located in one corner of this tract. Did you get that? Here's the purport. In Vraj, the land is divided into various vanas, or forests. The forests total 12, and their extension is estimated to be 84 kroshas. Of these, the special forest known as Vrindavan, is located from the present municipal city of Vrindavan to the village called Nandagram. This distance is 16 kroshas, 32 miles. But then all the Vaikuntha planets, which we just heard about, and which are unlimited in size, practically, they're just residing in one small corner of the Vrindavan. No one can estimate the opulence of Krishna. That is unlimited. However, just as one sees the moon through the branches of a tree, I wish to give a little indication. Purport, first a child is shown the branches of a tree, and then he is shown the moon through the branches. This is called Shaka Chandra Nyaya. The idea is that first one must be given a simpler example. Then the more difficult background is explained. 31. Well, describing the transcendental opulences of Krishna, the ocean of opulence manifested in the mind of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and his mind and senses were immersed in this ocean. Thus, he was perplexed. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally recited the following verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, and to relish the meaning, he began to explain it himself. This should give much... When we hear these things, we become more inspired to relish the verses. They become personalized. Imagine Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quoted these verses. Swayam tu asham ya tishayas tradishaha Swaraja lakshnyapta samastakama Balim harabhish chidalokapalai Kirita kodita kotidita parapita. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna is the master of the three worlds and the three principal demigods, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. No one is equal to or greater than him. By his spiritual potency known as Swaraja Lakshmi, all his desires are fulfilled. While offering their dues and presence in worship, the predominating deities of all the planets touch the lotus feet of the Lord with their helmets. Thus they offer prayers to the Lord. This quotation is verse 21 of the second chapter, third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. How's everybody? Hare Krishna. Okay, good. Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he is the greatest of all. No one is equal to him, nor is anyone greater than him. Krishna, known as Govinda, is the Supreme Controller. He has an eternal, blissful, spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin, and he's the supreme cause of all causes. If I was going to say that exact same thing in Sanskrit, what would you recommend? Well done. This is the first verse in the fifth chapter of the Brahma Samhita. The primary predominating deities of this material creation are Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu. Nonetheless, they simply carry out the orders of Lord Krishna, who is the master of all of them. Lord Brahma said, following the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I create. Lord Shiva destroys, and he himself, in the form of Shirdakshaya Vishnu, maintains all the affairs of the material nature. Thus, the supreme controller of the three modes of material nature is Lord Vishnu. That's from Srimad Bhagavatam 2.6.32. This is only a general description. Please try to understand another meaning of Trayadish. The three Purusha incarnations of Vishnu are the original cause of the material creation. Mahavishnu, Padmanabha, and Shirdakshai Vishnu are the super souls of all subtle and gross existences. Purport. Lord Mahavishnu is known as Karnadakshai Vishnu, the super soul of everything. Garbhadakshai Vishnu, from whose lotus navel Brahma was created, is also called Hiranyagarbha, and is the total super soul and the subtle super soul. Shirdakshai Vishnu is the universal form and the gross super soul. Although Mahavishnu, Padmanabha, Shirdakshai Vishnu, and all shelters and controllers of the entire universe, they are nonetheless but plenary portions or portions of the plenary portions of Krishna. Therefore, he is the original personality of Godhead. Hari Bol Swaraj, welcome back. The Brahmas and other lords of the mundane worlds appear from the pores of Mahavishnu and remain alive for the duration of his one exhalation. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, of whom Mahavishnu is a portion of a plenary portion. This is the middle meaning. Now please hear the confidential meaning. Do you want to hear the confidential meaning?
Yes.
But not very much, right? That's why you all came here today, to hear the confidential meaning. You heard the middle meaning, and now get ready for the confidential meaning. Lord Krishna has three places of residence, which are well known from the revealed scriptures. Purport, Krishna has three abodes. His internal abode, Goloka Vrindavan, is intermediate abode, the spiritual sky, and his external abode, this material world. The internal abode is called Goloka Vrindavan. It is there that Lord Krishna's personal friends, associates, father, and mother live. Vrindavan is the storehouse of Krishna's mercy and the sweet opulences of conjugal love. That is where the spiritual energy, working as a maidservant, exhibits the rasa dance, the quintessence of all pastimes. Vrindavan Tham is very soft due to the mercy of the Supreme Lord, and it is especially opulent due to conjugal love. The transcendental glories of the son of Maharaj Nanda are exhibited here. Under the circumstances, not the least anxiety is awakened within us. Below the Vrindavan planet is the spiritual sky, which is known as Vishnu Loka. In Vishnu Loka, there are innumerable Vaikuntha planets controlled by Narayan and innumerable other expansions of Krishna. The spiritual sky, which is full in all six opulences, is the intermediate residence of Lord Krishna. It is there that an unlimited number of forms of Krishna enjoy their pastimes. Innumerable Vaikuntha planets, which are just like different rooms of a treasure house, are all there, filled with all opulences. Those unlimited planets house the Lord's eternal associates who are all enriched with the six opulences. Below the planet named Goloka Vrindavan are the planets known as Devi Dham, Mahesh Dham, and Hari Dham. These are opulent in different ways. They are managed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, the original Lord. I offer my obeisances unto him. That's from Brahma Samhita, you all recognize, of course. Between the spiritual and the material world is a body of water known as the river Viraja. Known as what?
Viraja.
This water is generated from the bodily perspiration of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is known as Vedanga. Thus, the river flows. This verse and the following verse are from the Padma Purana. From which Purana? Beyond the river Viraja is the spiritual nature, which is indestructible, eternal, inexhaustible, and unlimited. It is the supreme abode consisting of three-fourths of the Lord's opulences. It is known as Paravyoma, the spiritual sky. Purport. In the spiritual sky, there is neither anxiety nor fear. It is eternally existing, and it consists of three-fourths of the Lord's energy. The material world is an exhibition of only one-fourth of the Lord's energy. Therefore, it is called Ekapad Vibhuti. On the other side of the river Viraja is the external abode, which is full of unlimited universes, each containing unlimited atmospheres. The abode of the external energy is called Devidam. Called what?
Devidam.
And its inhabitants are the conditioned souls. It is there that the material energy, Durga, resides with many opulent maidservants. Now I'm going to read the purport to this verse, and it will change your life forever. Yes. You'll never be the same after you hear this. Are you ready?
Yes.
But not very much, right? Okay, here goes. Listen carefully. Because he wants to enjoy the material energy, the conditioned soul is allowed to reside in Devidam, the external energy, where goddess Durga carries out the orders of the Supreme Lord as his maidservant. The material energy is called Jagalakshmi because she protects the bewildered conditioned souls. Goddess Durga is therefore known as the material mother, and Lord Shiva, her husband, is known as the material father. Goddess Durga is so named because this material world is like a big fort where the conditioned soul is placed under her care. For material facilities, the conditioned soul tries to please Goddess Durga, and Mother Durga supplies all kinds of material facilities. Because of this, the conditioned souls are allured and do not wish to leave the external energy. Consequently, they are continuously making plans to live here peacefully and happily. Such is the material world. I rest my case. Changed, right? Forever. This first sentence is very profound. There's a word that Prabhupada uses in the first sentence that is pivotal in understanding one's existence in the material world. And that word is allowed. Because he wants to enjoy the material energy, the conditioned soul is allowed to reside in Devidam. Allowed, huh?
So otherwise?
Means that it's by one's own choice. Now, you're allowed to live here. You want to go live in that section? You're allowed to. Krishna is very liberal. He's given independence. He's not a religious fanatic. He is not a vengeful god. He's actually the most liberal of all liberal personalities. And he allows you to go wherever you want. It's like, I want to go there. I want to go there. I want to go there. All right, go there. But it's not his desire. He allows it due to the impetus of the soul to be the controller. And as soon as one understands that I'm not the controller, then one's happy life begins again. That one accepts, of course, one's happy life begins when one understands Krishna is the controller. Because a hand is a hand. And when a hand just does what a hand does, then it's perfectly natural and happy. And a soul is a servant of Krishna. When he just simply serves Krishna, then he's happy. Can you give Vishakalila a asan, please? Anyway, how did you like that purport? Anything else you heard in there that struck your imagination? Yes?
We want to live peacefully and happily and blessed.
Yeah. Say that again.
That, you know, I think it was written, I don't exactly recollect, but it is that the arrangement is like that. The soul wanted to live here peacefully and happily in this material world. So, you know, we get all the facilities, so we think it's a good place to be.
Consequently, they are continuously making plans to live here peacefully and happily, such as the material world. Yeah, that's striking, isn't it? Making plans. Yes.
I got reminded of one example that Radhanath Swami says, that people usually, when they are put in prison, they want to escape. But material world is such an open place, there are no walls and everything, but nobody makes arrangement to escape, but they want to live, as you said, happily and peacefully in this world. So.
Yeah, as long as I got Black Friday Nordstrom and get a little something, maybe it's not so bad after all. And always planning that something good might happen. Sundar Ananda Prabhu.
Well, I have a question. So unless we come to the platform of acting on the spirit soul, or come to the platform of realizing that we are a spirit and we are not this body, it's hard to give up, you know, trying to enjoy in this material world or trying to be peaceful here. So it looks like it's like chicken and egg problem. Like,
not really, because the thing is, the medicine is so potent, and all you have to do is hang around long enough for the medicine to take effect. Pardon me?
I didn't get his question.
Oh, he was saying that in order to actually experience these things, you have to act on the spiritual platform, but as long as one's affected by material mind and senses and so forth, it's very difficult to attain that. And therefore, how does one ever get any kind of experience for oneself? Something like that? But the thing is that the medicine is so potent, especially hearing and chanting, that if you can keep yourself in the presence of the doctor and stay in the hospital, just follow the directions. And you know, first thing is admit that you're sick. Otherwise, it's difficult. Some people don't go to the doctor and then they drop dead because it's a macho thing. Like a lot in Latino culture is like, you know, you're experiencing heart pains, you should go to the doctor. And say, nope, nope. And then boom, you know, like, I told you to go to the doctor. So first of all, give up your macho thing and admit that you need help and take assistance. And if you can understand that and keep taking the medicine, despite the fact that it's not, you may appear it's not acting on you yet. This verse Krishna gives in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where he says that prityagyepyanishvara, that the person knows he should give up everything, but pyanishvara, he doesn't have the strength to do it yet. But Krishna says this is a natural stage that one goes through, where first of all, he says he understands jata shada makatasu nirvina sarvakarmasu. He understands that all material things lead to, material engagements lead to frustration, and he's actually kind of disgusted with the whole thing. But prityagye pyanishvara, he still can't give it up. So Krishna says, go on. Just keep going on with your, tolerate that situation. And you can harbor that feeling of discontent. He says, to gariyan. Gariyan means you should be a little repentant that, you know, you took a bad bargain. Best use of a bad bargain, you got ripped off. Admit it. and so now live with it and try to rectify the situation. Just go on, stay in it. The medicine's so potent that if you can keep yourself in the process long enough, then you'll start to improve. And just like when you're sick and you start to take medicine, at first you don't notice it at all. You're just going on total faith of the doctor that this thing's going to work. And because the doctor was recommended to you, and he had a diploma on his wall, and you know, other people seem to have been healed by him, and so I'm going to try, even though it seems hopeless. So you take the medicine and you keep taking it according to the prescription, and then one day you wake up and you think, maybe I'm a little better, but you're not sure. You think maybe it's your imagination. And then the next day you think, no, I think I'm definitely better, but maybe I'll stay in this state where I'm only half better. Maybe I won't improve all the way. And the next day you actually feel, you know, 75% better. And then finally, when you hit 100% recovery, then you feel strong and you know for yourself that actually I'm back to full strength. No one has to tell you. And then people look at you and go, wow, you're better. You jumped off the porch. You know, when you were sick, you didn't do that. So it's something that you experience for yourself, you feel for yourself. And those who are wise enough to continue taking the medicine, even though they're not visually improving, will definitely recover quicker. It takes a lot longer if you stop taking it and then you come back to it later and go, okay, well, there's no other alternative. I tried everything else again. It didn't work. So now I'm coming back to what appears to be the only cure. Just stick in the process. Yes, Bhakti Natalie. I don't know. I'll have to look it up after. I can't remember the verse number. Jata Shraddha Makatasu. Okay, continuing on after that life-changing purport, we'll never be the same. None of us. Krishna is the supreme proprietor of all dhams, including Goloka Dham, Vaikuntha Dham, and Devi Dham. The Paravyom and Goloka Dham are beyond Devi Dham, this material world. Purport, when a living entity is liberated from Devi Dham, but does not know of the opulence of Hari Dham, he is placed in Mahesh Dham, which is between the other two Dhams. The liberated soul does not get an opportunity to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead there. Therefore, although this Mahesh Dham is Lord Shiva's Dham and above Devi Dham, it is not the spiritual world. The spiritual world begins with Hari Dham or Vaikuntha Loka. 55. The spiritual world is considered to be three-fourths of the energy and opulence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whereas this material world is only one-fourth of that energy. This is our understanding. Purport, Hari Dham, Paravyom, and Goloka Vrindavan are beyond the material cosmic manifestation. They are celebrated as three-fourths of the Lord's energy. The material energy conducted by the Supreme Lord's external energy is called Devi Dham and is a manifestation of one-fourth of his energy. 56. Because it consists of three-fourths of the Lord's energy, the spiritual world is called Tripad Bhuta. Being a manifestation of one-fourth of the Lord's energy, the material world is called Ekapad. This is verse from Laghu Bhagavatamrita, which is the next book coming out from the Sanskrit Academy. The Laghu Bhagavatamrita was actually translated and given commentary by Gopi Pranadana Prabhu before he left. It's manuscript form, but they're finishing it up. We just got the Tattva Sandarbha, and now we're going to get the Laghu Bhagavatamrita. These are great treasures. Pardon me? The Laghu Bhagavatamrita Sanatana Goswami. It's all about the taxonomy of the various incarnations of the Lord. The three-fourths part of the Lord Krishna's energy is beyond our speaking power. Let us therefore hear elaborately about the remaining one-fourth of his energy. Actually, it is very difficult to ascertain the number of universes. Every universe has its separate Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, who are known as permanent governors. Therefore, there is no counting them. Purport, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are called Chiralokapal, permanent governors. This means that they govern the affairs of the universe from the beginning of the creation to the end. In the next creation, the same living entities may not be present. But because Brahma and Shiva are existing from the beginning to the end, they are called Chiralokapal, permanent governors. Lokapal means predominating deities. There are eight predominating deities of the predominant heavenly planets, and they are Indra, Agni, Yama, Varuna, Nriti, Vayu, Kuvera, and Shiva. Who can name them all without looking? Pretty close. Once, when Lord Krishna was ruling Dwarka, Lord Brahma came to him, and the doorman immediately informed Lord Krishna of Brahma's arrival. When Krishna was so informed, he immediately asked the doorman, "Which Brahma? What is his name?" The doorman therefore returned and questioned Lord Brahma. Purport. From this verse, we can understand that Brahma is the name of the post and that the person occupying the post has a particular name also. From the Bhagavad Gita, Imam Bhira Vivashvate Yogam, Vivaswan is the name of the present predominating deity of the sun. He is generally called Surya, the sun god, but he also has his own particular name. The governor of the state is generally called Rajapal, but he also has his own individual name. Since there are hundreds of and thousands of Brahmas with different names, Krishna wanted to know which of them had come to see him. 61. When the doorman asked which Brahma, Lord Brahma was surprised. He told the doorman, "Please go inform Lord Krishna that I am the four-headed Brahma who is the father of the four Kumaras." The doorman then informed Lord Krishna of Lord Brahma's description, and Lord Krishna gave him permission to enter. The doorman escorted Lord Brahma in, and as soon as Brahma saw Lord Krishna, he offered his obeisances at his lotus feet. After being worshipped by Lord Brahma, Lord Krishna also honored him with suitable words. Then Lord Krishna asked him, "Why have you come here?" Being questioned, Lord Brahma immediately replied, "Later I shall tell you why I have come. First of all, there is a doubt in my mind which I wish you to kindly dissipate. Why did you inquire which Brahma had come to see you? What is the purpose of such inquiry? Is there any other Brahma besides me within the universe?" Upon hearing this, Sri Krishna smiled and immediately meditated. Unlimited Brahmas arrived instantly. These Brahmas had different numbers of heads, some of them 10 heads, some 20, some 100, some 1,000, and some 10,000, some 100,000, some 10 million, and others 100 million. No one can count the number of faces they had. There also arrived many Lord Shivas with various heads numbering 100,000 and 10 million. Many Indras also arrived, and they had hundreds of thousands of eyes all over their bodies. Purport. It is said that Indra, the king of heaven, is very lusty. Once he had sexual intercourse with the wife of a great sage, and when the sage learned about this, he cursed lusty Indra with a curse that put vaginas all over his body. Being very much ashamed, Indra fell down at the lotus feet of the great sage and begged his pardon. Being compassionate, the sage turned the vaginas into eyes. Therefore, Indra possesses hundreds and thousands of eyes all over his body, just as Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva have many faces, and the king of heaven, Indra, has many eyes. 69. When the four-headed Brahma of this universe saw all these opulences of Krishna, he became very much bewildered and considered himself a rabbit among many elephants. All the Brahmas... Okay. Microphone.
Because when Lord Krishna exhibited Brahma Vimohana Leela, at that time also, sometimes we hear that Lord Krishna brought the Brahmas from different universes, and the current Brahma of this universe, he actually saw them. And then here again, the Lord Brahma is asking...
These are stories you can, from the Puranas. They're not specific chronological incidents. This is mentioned by Jiva Goswami, the Tattva Sandarbha. The Srimad Bhagavatam is not chronological, and therefore to try to follow a linear path and say why this happened before that is not possible.
You can understand that Brahma Vimohana Leela, it happened when Krishna was as a child and he was in Vrindavan, and this is a Dwaraka. So
same answer. It's not relevant, because there can be different, it doesn't say, you know, when this particular pastime happened, what particular millennium or what the circumstances. The point is to take the story, not to try to figure out exactly what the forensics are. All the Brahmas who came to see Krishna offered their respects at his lotus feet, and when they did this, their helmets touched his lotus feet. No one can estimate the inconceivable potency of Krishna. All the Brahmas who were there were resting in the one body of Krishna. When all the helmets struck together at Krishna's lotus feet, there was a tumultuous sound. It appeared that the helmets themselves were offering prayers unto Lord Krishna's lotus feet. With folded hands, all the Brahmas and Shivas began to offer prayers unto Lord Krishna, saying, "O Lord, you have shown me a great favor. I've been able to see your lotus feet. All of them then said, it is my great fortune, Lord, that you have called me, thinking me as your servant. Now let me know what your order is, so that I may carry it on my heads. Lord Krishna replied, since I wanted to see all of you together, I have called you all here. All of you should be happy. Is there any fear from the demons? They replied, by your mercy, we are victorious everywhere. Whatever burden was upon the earth, you have taken away by your descending to that planet. This is the proof of Dwarka's opulence. All the Brahmas thought, Krishna is now staying in my jurisdiction. Thus, the opulence of Dwarka was perceived by each and every one of them. Although they were all assembled together, no one could see anyone but himself. Purport, the four-headed Brahma perceived the opulence of Dwarka Dham, where Krishna was staying. And although there were Brahmins present having 10 to 10 million heads, and although many Lord Shivas were also assembled, only the four-headed Brahma of this universe could see all of them. By the inconceivable potency of Krishna, the others could not be seen, could not see one another. Although all the Brahmas and Shivas were assembled together due to Krishna's energy, they could not meet or talk amongst themselves individually. Lord Krishna then bade farewell to all the Brahmas there, and after offering their obeisances, they all returned to their respective homes. After observing all these opulences, the four-headed Brahma of this universe was astonished. He again came before the lotus feet of Krishna and offered him obeisances. Brahma then said, whatever I formerly decided about my knowledge, I have just now had personally verified. There are people who say, I know everything about Krishna. Let them think in that way. As far as I am concerned, I do not wish to speak very much about this matter. O my Lord, let me say this much. As far as your opulences are concerned, they are all beyond the reach of my mind, body, and words. That's from the 14th chapter of the 10th canto, 38th verse, spoken by Lord Brahma. Krishna said, your particular universe has a diameter of 4 billion miles. Therefore, it is the smallest of all the universes. Consequently, you have only four heads. Purport, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, one of the greatest astrologers of his time, gives information from the Siddhanta Shiromani that this universe measures 18,712,069,000,000. Did I get that right? I started. Is it trillion?
I think 712 trillion.
So what goes? What's the seven? What's above the trillion then? 18,712,069,200,000,000 × 8 miles. This is the circumference of this universe. According to some, this is only half the circumference. Some of the universes are 1 billion yojanas in diameter, some 1 trillion, some 10 trillion, and some 100 trillion yojanas. Thus, they are almost unlimited in area. A yojana equals 8 miles, just so you know. According to the size of the universe, there are so many heads on the body of Brahma. In this way, I maintain innumerable universes, brahmandas. No one can measure the length and breadth of the 1/4 of my energy manifested in the material world. Who then can measure the 3/4 that is manifested in the spiritual world? Beyond the river Viraja is the spiritual nature, which is indestructible, eternal, inexhaustible, and unlimited. It is the supreme abode consisting of 3/4 of the Lord's opulences. It is known as Paravyom, the spiritual sky. In this way, Lord Krishna bade farewell to the four-headed Brahma of this universe. We may thus understand that no one can calculate the extent of Krishna's energies. There is very deep meaning in the word Triyadishvara, which indicates that Krishna possesses three different lokas or natures. Purport. The word Tradishvara means proprietor of the three worlds. There are three worlds, and Lord Krishna is the supreme proprietor of them all. This is explained by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Bhuktaram jagyatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suridam sarvabhutanam yatvamam shantim richyati. A person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the supreme lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material existence. The word sarvaloka means all these worlds, and the word maheshwara means the supreme proprietor. Krishna is the proprietor of both the material and the spiritual world. The spiritual world is divided into two portions, Goloka Vrindavan and the Vaikunthas. The material world is a combination of universes unlimited in number. 91. The three lokas are Gokula, Goloka, Mathura, and Dwarka. Krishna lives eternally in these three places. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati comments that in the Goloka planet there are three divisions, Gokul, Mathura, and Dwarka. In his incarnation as Gaurasundara, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Lord conducts his pastimes in three areas, Navadvip, Jagannath Puri, and South India, and Rajmandal, the area of Vrindavan Dham. These three places are full of internal potencies, and Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is their sole proprietor. As previously mentioned, the jewels on the helmet of all the predominating deities of all the universes and Vaikuntha planets touch the throne and the lotus feet of the Lord when those deities all offered obeisances. When the gems on the helmets of all the predominating deities collided before the throne of the Lord's lotus feet, throne and the Lord's lotus feet, there was a jingling sound which seemed like prayers offered by the helmets at Krishna's lotus feet. Krishna is thus situated eternally in his spiritual potency, and the opulence of that spiritual potency is called Shat Aishvarya, indicating six kinds of opulences. Because he possesses the spiritual potencies which fulfill all his desires, Krishna is accepted as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the Vedic version. The unlimited potencies of Krishna are just like an ocean of nectar. Since one cannot bathe within that ocean, I have only touched a drop of it. That was the section describing the opulence, Hare Krishna, the opulence of Krishna, and giving us just a few examples of how unlimited Krishna's material nature is, and then showing how that's insignificant compared to the spiritual world. Yeah. Microphone.
Guru Maharaj, I'm sorry, but I'm a little lost. Mm-hmm. We got to a point where we said we were going to do the confidential part, and then we started with the three worlds, and then we went on. So I'm trying to understand, are we still in the confidential part? What we finished was the confidential part. Could you recap and tell me what was confidential?
Yeah, this whole revelation is confidential. That there's not many people. It can only be understood through descending mercy. How there's a material and spiritual world. Otherwise, how do you know? You can't see it with a telescope and so forth. So in that sense, it's confidential. And then understanding how it's Krishna's own abode and so forth.
So the description, the descriptions we heard,
yes,
is the confidential part.
Yeah.
The understanding that it exists is different from understanding how beautiful it is, or how detailed it is.
Well, both are important. First, you have to understand that it exists, and then when, otherwise your mind will be closed to the details. You won't even be interested if you think that it's just some fantasy or something like that. Yes.
Prabhu, in one of the purports we read that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu performs his pastimes in Jagannath Puri, Navadvip, and Rajamandala, the area of Rajamandala. So is this referring to the one in the material world, or is there these dhams in the spiritual world also?
They're also there in the spiritual world also. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's abodes are eternal, and devotees, those abodes are also eternal abodes, because he's Swayam Bhagavan, he has his own realm in the spiritual world. And it's identical. Navadvip and Vrajmandal are identical except for slightly different moods. One's Audorya and the other's Madhurya. And one can, those who are devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can practically live in both dhams at the same time. Yes.
Prabhuji, this is still in my limited mind, trying to comprehend. I know it's difficult, but in Vrindavan, I heard, you know, Krishna has unlimited cows, you know, when he was there. You know, but if you visit there, the area is so small, you know, like millions or billions of cows. I was just trying to see how do we take it so that we feel this is, you know.
You mean if you get a measuring tape out and you say, how do the cow, this many cows fit in such an area?
Yeah, I mean, something.
Well, first of all, the point was being made here is that actually Krishna's abode is the spiritual world. It appears as a little village, 32 square miles. But actually, the abode of Krishna, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu pointed out here, is bigger than all the spiritual worlds put together. That is, all the Vishnu lokas, which are unlimited in size. You can't measure them. They gave the measurements, but those were just to give us an idea that you can't comprehend how large they are. All of those are subsumed within the area of Goloka. So it's a village. It's a small village. And it's a spiritual area. It's not something that you can measure. One of the definitions of Maya means to measure. Try to measure everything. One of the reasons I want to measure everything is so I can control it. Because as soon as the intelligence can measure it, then I can say, okay, I can get my mind around that one. The whole exercise, the reason Lord Chaitanya is going into these descriptions that are so vast and describing how vast in size they are, is so just to say, you can't get your mind around this. It's not measurable for you. He keeps saying that you can't measure this. So it's not a physical area like this room where, you know, there's a certain number of things you can fit in this room and then we have to get a storage locker outside or something like that. But the spiritual world is, it can accommodate unlimited, it's unlimitedly accommodating. I mean, in a sense, it has to do with the energy is there is completely different from the material world. It's subtle. Like anyway, I'll just leave it at that for now. It's not measurable. It's not a measurable space like in the material world. And it's expansive unlimitedly, and it can accommodate everybody and everything. And does. Okay, so I just want to go, in the time we have left, which is very little, is to go into the sweetness of Krishna, because that's the next section. First was the opulence, and then the sweetness, as advertised. And this next section gives very vivid descriptions of Krishna's qualities, pastimes, his personal features, and so forth. So just listen. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was describing the opulences and spiritual potencies of Krishna in this way, there was an awakening of love of Krishna within him. His mind became immersed in the sweetness of conjugal love, and he quoted the following verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. To exhibit the strength of his own spiritual potency, Lord Krishna manifested a form just suitable for his pastimes in the material world. This form was wonderful even for him and was the supreme abode of the wealth of good fortune. Its limbs were so beautiful that they increased the beauty of the ornaments worn on different parts of his body. This verse is from the Bhagavatam. 3.2.12. It is stated in a conversation between Vidura and Uddhava. Uddhava thus begins his description of the pastimes of Sri Krishna in his form exhibited by Yogamaya. Text 101. Lord Krishna has many pastimes, of which his pastimes as a human being are the best. His form as a human being is the supreme transcendental form. In this form, he is a cowherd boy. He carries a flute in his hand, and his youth is new. He is an expert dancer. All this is just suitable for his pastimes as a human being. My dear Sanatan, the sweet, attractive, transcendental form of Krishna is so nice. Just try to understand it. Even a fractional understanding of Krishna's beauty can emerge all three worlds in the ocean of love. He attracts all living entities within the three worlds. The transcendental form of Krishna is shown to the world by Lord Krishna's internal spiritual energy, which is a transformation of pure goodness. This jewel-like form is the most confidential treasure of the devotees. This form is manifested from Krishna's eternal pastimes. This wonderful form of Krishna and his personal feature is so great that it attracts even Krishna to taste his own association. Indeed, Krishna becomes very eager to taste it. Total beauty, knowledge, wealth, strength, fame, and renunciation are the six opulences of Krishna. He is eternally situated in his opulences. Purport. Krishna has many pastimes, of which his pastimes in Goloka Vrindavan, the Gokula Lila, are supreme. He also has pastimes in the Vaikunthas, the spiritual world, as Vasudev, Sankarsana, Pradyumna, Ananiruddha. In his pastimes in the spiritual world, he lies down in the causal ocean as Karnadakshay Vishnu. Pastimes in the spiritual sky, rather. Karnadakshay Vishnu, the Purusha avatar. His incarnations as a fish, tortoise, and so on, called his causal incarnations. His incarnations, he incarnates in the modes of nature as Lord Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu. He also incarnates as empowered living entities like Prithu and Vyas. The Supersoul is his localized incarnation, and his all-pervasive aspect is the impersonal Brahman. When we consider impartially all the unlimited pastimes of the Lord, we find that his pastimes as a human being on this planet, wherein he sports as a cowherd boy with a flute in his hand and appears youthful and fresh like a ballet dancer, are pastimes and features that are never subjected to material laws and inebrieties. The wonderful beauty of Krishna is presented in the spiritual, in the supreme planet Gokula Goloka Vrindavan. Inferior to that is his representation in the spiritual sky, and inferior to that is his representation in the external energy, Devi Dham. A mere drop of Krishna's sweetness can drown the three worlds, Goloka Vrindavan, Harinam, Vaikuntha, and Devidam, the material world. Everywhere, Krishna's beauty merges everyone in the ecstasy of transcendental bliss. Although the activities of Yogamaya are absent in the spiritual sky and the Vaikuntha planets. The activities of Yogamaya are absent in the spiritual sky and the Vaikuntha planets. She simply works in the supreme planet, Goloka Vrindavan, and she works to manifest the activities of Krishna when he descends to the material universe to please his innumerable devotees within the material world. Thus, a replica of the Goloka Vrindavan planet and the supreme pastimes there is manifested on this planet on a specific tract of land, Bauma Vrindavan, the Vrindavan Dham of this planet. That planet also is covered, Rajesh, with a film through which one with material vision cannot see the actual Dham. That's why it's important when going to the Dham to carefully cultivate knowledge that I can't see everything, and don't become irreverent or think, you know, how can the Dham be like this or that. We can't see the Dham until we actually have the proper vision to see it. There's a thin covering over it, Praudamaya, so that we can't see its actual existence. But we're there, we're within it, and you will feel the effects of it. But one should walk carefully in the Dham. That's why there are 10 offenses against the Dham that one should study carefully before going there. And part of that, you know, approach is to practice suspending disbelief and trying to measure too much. Like, how could this fit there and this there? How could so many things? When Prabhupada first came out with the Krishna book, and devotees, a few people read, actually I only know of one specifically who read certain pastimes and said, how could they all fit? This seems fantastical. And Prabhupada said, you are fantastical. You can't accommodate, you know, Krishna's material creation is unlimited, what to speak of his spiritual creation. But the Dham is available only through spiritual vision. Ornaments, yes.
In the 100th verse, it is mentioned that Krishna has taken the... Lord Krishna manifested a form just suitable for his pastime in the material world. So, but what we understand that Krishna has, he came in his own form. So
yeah, his own form, but practically speaking, according to those who are you know, spontaneous devotees of the Lord, like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains. I mean, there are a couple descriptions of Krishna's appearance in this world and how the eighth child born of Devaki was Krishna. He appeared with four hands and all his ornaments, fully dressed and opulent. That's not Krishna. I mean, it is Krishna. He's not different from Krishna, but it's a different manifestation of Krishna. It's Vasudev Krishna. And he was brought by the assistance of Yogamaya and carried by Vasudev to Gokula. And he was exchanged there, apparently for Maya Devi, who had apparently been born. So this is one description given in the Shastra, and the other is that she had twins. Krishna was actually born there from Yashoda, along with Yogamaya. And when Vasudeva Krishna was brought from Mathura to Gokula, he merged into the body of the actual Krishna, who is his birth is so much like a regular human child, that because in that realm there's complete attachment and no consideration that this is God. I mean, Devaki was going, oh my God, you're God. Please stop it, because if you could change, you know, right now, because she saw that Kamsa would come at any minute, so she was, you know, seeing his opulence and like, not right now, don't do this now. But in Gokula, Krishna was just born as a human child with all the attachment that a mother and a father and everyone else in the village has for the baby, with no, you know, real sense of his opulence. The opulence is covered. So in that sense, you know, there's a distinction made between Goloka and Gokula, in that his pastimes in Gokula are lauded by our acharyas. He's even more sweet than in Goloka, because he appears there apparently as completely as a human child. Of course, that's because he's covering, you know, himself with his Yogamaya is covering, so that he can have these very intimate exchanges with his devotees. Okay? This form was wonderful even for him, and was the supreme abode of the wealth. Well, this is Krishna amazes even himself. He can't understand the extent of his glories. That's why he comes as Lord Chaitanya. he sees, you know, that Krishna's newer and newer and always amazing everyone, even himself, because he's ever fresh. He's one of the predominant experiences of the devotees is wonderment, because at every moment Krishna is becoming more beautiful and more qualities and so forth. And as explained here, he's amazed even by his own self. And who can taste those qualities? The devotees can taste those qualities and try to get a different perspective, to try to taste more of that opulence and sweetness of Krishna. So he takes the perspective of one of his devotees and comes as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's the nature of the devotee, or the prerogative of the devotee, is to unlimitedly taste Krishna. So it's there within Krishna also, trying to taste himself. May I have permission to read for 5 more minutes? Because I want to get to some of the poetry of Kaviraj Goswami, which is just coming up. May I?
Yes.
Yeah, like I'm sure you're going to say no, right? Okay, 106. The beauty of Krishna's body is so attractive that it attracts not only the demigods and other living entities within this material world, but the personalities of the spiritual sky as well, including the Narayans, who are expansions of Krishna's personality. The minds of the Narayans are thus attracted by the beauty of Krishna's body. In addition, the goddesses of fortune, Lakshmis, who are the wives of the Narayans, are the women described in the Vedas as most chaste and also attracted by the wonderful beauty of Krishna. These are the poems of Kaviraj Goswami. Favoring the gopis, Krishna rides on the chariots of their minds, and just to receive loving service from them, he attracts their minds like Cupid. Therefore, he is also called Madan Mohan. Shri Shri Radha Madan Mohan Ji Ki Jai. The attractor of Cupid. Cupid has 5 arrows representing form, taste, smell, sound, and touch. Krishna is the owner of these 5 arrows, and with his Cupid-like beauty, he conquers the minds of the gopis, though they are very proud of their super excellent beauty. Becoming a new Cupid, Krishna attracts their minds and engages in the rasa dance. When Lord Krishna wanders in the forest of Vrindavan with his friends on an equal level, there are innumerable cows grazing. This is another of the Lord's blissful enjoyments. When he plays on his flute, all living entities, including trees, plants, animals, and human beings, tremble and are saturated with jubilation. Tears flow constantly from their eyes. Krishna wears a pearl necklace that appears like a chain of white ducks around his neck. The peacock feather in his hair appears like a rainbow, and his yellow garments appear like lightning in the sky. Krishna appears like a newly risen cloud, and the gopis appear like newly grown grains in the field. Constant rains of the nectarian pastimes fall upon these newly grown grains, and it seems that the gopis are receiving beams of life from Krishna exactly as grains receive life from the rains. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna is full in all 6 opulences, including his attractive beauty, which engages him in conjugal love with the gopis. Such sweetness is the quintessence of his qualities. Shukadev Goswami, the son of Vyasadeva, has described these pastimes of Krishna throughout Srimad Bhagavatam. Hearing the descriptions, the devotees become mad with love of God. Just as the women of Mathura ecstatically describe the fortune of the gopis of Vrindavan and the transcendental qualities of Krishna, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described the different mellows of Krishna and became overwhelmed with ecstatic love. Grasping the hand of Sanatana Goswami, he recited the following verse. What austerities must the gopis have performed? With their eyes, they always drink the nectar of the form of Lord Krishna, which is the essence of loveliness and is not to be equaled or surpassed. That loveliness is the only abode of beauty, fame, and opulence. It is self-perfect, ever fresh, and unique. From Bhagavatam 10:44:14. spoken by the women of Mathura when they saw Krishna in the wrestling arena. The bodily beauty of Sri Krishna is like a wave in the ocean of eternal youth. In that great ocean is the whirlpool of the awakenings of ecstatic love. The vibration of Krishna's flute is like a whirlwind, and the flickering minds of the gopis are like straws and dry leaves. After they fall down in the whirlwind, they never rise again, but remain eternally at the lotus feet of Krishna. O my dear friend, what severe austerities have the gopis performed to drink his transcendental beauty and sweetness through their eyes in complete fulfillment? Thus they glorify their births, bodies, and minds. The sweetness of Krishna's beauty enjoyed by the gopis is unparalleled. Nothing is equal to or greater than such ecstatic sweetness. Even the predominating deities of the Vaikuntha planets, the Narayans, do not possess such sweetness. Indeed, none of the incarnations of Krishna up to Narayan possess such transcendental beauty. The vivid evidence in this regard is that the dearest consort of Narayan, the goddess of fortune, who is worshipped by all chaste women, gave up everything in her desire to enjoy Krishna, being captivated by his unparalleled sweetness. Thus she took a great vow and underwent severe austerities. The quintessence of Krishna's sweet bodily luster is so perfect that there is no perfection above it. He is the innumerable mine of all transcendental qualities. In his other manifestations and personal expansions, there is only a partial exhibition of such qualities. We understand all his personal expansions in this way. Both the gopis and Krishna are complete. The gopis' ecstatic love is like a mirror that becomes newer and newer at every moment and reflects Krishna's bodily luster and sweetness. Thus competition increases. Since neither give up, their pastimes become newer and newer, and both sides constantly increase. The transcendental mellows generated from the dealings between the gopis and Krishna cannot be tasted by means of fruitive activity, yogic austerities, speculative knowledge, regulated devotional service, mantra yoga, or meditation. This sweetness can be tasted only through the spontaneous love of liberated persons who chant the holy name with great ecstatic love. Such ecstatic transactions between Krishna and the gopis are possible only in Vrindavan, which is full of the opulences of transcendental love. The form of Krishna is the original source of all transcendental qualities. It is like a mine of gems. The opulences belonging to the personal expanses of Krishna are to be understood to be bestowed by Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is the original source and shelter of everyone. Beauty, humility, mercy, merit, patience, and expert intelligence are all manifested in Krishna. Besides these, Krishna has other qualities like good behavior, mildness, and magnanimity. He also performs welfare activities for the whole world. All these qualities are not visible in expansions like Narayan. Purport, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that the qualities of beauty, humility, mercy, merit, patience, and expert intelligence are brilliant qualities. And when they are exhibited in the person of Narayan, one should know that they are bestowed upon Narayan by Krishna. Good behavior, mildness, and magnanimity are found only in Krishna. Only Krishna performs welfare activities for the whole world. 122. After seeing Krishna, various people criticize the blinking of their eyes. In Vrindavan especially, all the gopis criticize Lord Brahma because of this defect in the eyes. Then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recited some verses from Srimad Bhagavatam and explained them vividly, thus enjoying the taste of transcendental sweetness with great happiness. All men and women were accustomed to enjoying the beauty of the shining face of Lord Krishna, as well as his shark-shaped earrings swinging on his ears. His beautiful features, his cheeks, and his playful smiles all combined to form a constant festival for the eyes. And the blinking of the eyes became obstacles that impeded one from seeing that beauty. For this reason, men and women became very angry at the Creator, Lord Brahma. O Krishna, when you go to the forest during the day and we do not see your sweet face, which is surrounded by beautiful curly hair, half a second becomes as long as an entire age for us. and we consider the Creator who has put eyelids on the eyes we use for seeing you to be simply a fool. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is identical with the Vedic hymn known as Kama Gayatri, which is composed of 24 and a half syllables. Those syllables are compared to moons that arise in Krishna. Thus, all three worlds are filled with desire. The face of Krishna is the king of all moons, and the body of Krishna is the throne. Thus, the king governs a society of moons. Purport, Krishna's face is considered the king of moons, and his body is considered the throne. All the other chandras, moons, are considered to be subordinate moons. His left cheek is a moon, his right cheek is a moon, his forehead is considered half a moon, the spot of sandalwood pulp on his forehead is considered a moon, and his fingernails and toenails are also different moons. Krishna has two cheeks that shine like glowing gems. Both are considered full moons. His forehead is considered a half moon, and the spot of sandalwood there is considered a full moon. His fingernails are many full moons, and they dance on the flute of his hands. Their song is the melody of that flute. His toenails are as many full moons, and they dance on the ground. Their song is the jingling of his ankle bells. Krishna's face is the enjoyer king. That full moon face makes his shark-shaped earrings and lotus eyes dance. His eyebrows are like bows, and his eyes are like arrows. His ears are fixed on the string of that bow, and when his eyes spread to his ears, he pierces the hearts of the gopis. The dancing features of his face surpass all other full moons and expand the marketplace of full moons. Although priceless, the nectar of Krishna's face is distributed to everyone. Some purchase the moon rays of his sweet smiles, and others purchase the nectar of his lips. Thus he pleases everyone. Krishna has two reddish, widely spread eyes. These are ministers of the king, and they subdue the pride of Cupid, who also has beautiful eyes. The face of Govinda, which is full of happiness, is the home of the pastimes of beauty. It is very pleasing to everyone's eyes. If by devotional service one gets the results of pious activities and sees Lord Krishna's face, what can he relish with only two eyes? His greed and thirst increase threefold by seeing the nectarian face of Krishna. Due to his inability to sufficiently drink that nectar, he becomes very unhappy and criticizes the Creator for not having given more than two eyes. When the onlooker of Krishna's face becomes dissatisfied in this way, he thinks, why didn't the Creator give me thousands and millions of eyes? Why has he given me only two? Even these two eyes are disturbed by blinking, which keeps me from continuously seeing Krishna's face. Thus one accuses the Creator of being dry and tasteless due to engaging in severe austerities. The Creator is only a dry manufacturer. He does not know how to create and set things in their proper places. The Creator says, let those who will see Krishna's beautiful face have two eyes. Just see the lack of consideration considered by this person posing as a creator. If the Creator took my advice, he would give millions of eyes to the person who intends to see Krishna's face. If the Creator will accept this advice, then I would say that he is competent in his work. The transcendental form of Lord Sri Krishna is compared to an ocean. A particularly extraordinary vision is the moon above that ocean, Sri Krishna's face. And an even more extraordinary vision is his smile, which is sweeter than sweet and is like shining beams of moonlight. When speaking of these things with Sanatan Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to remember one thing after another. Moving his hands in ecstasy, he recited a verse. O my Lord, the transcendental body of Krishna is very sweet, and his face is even sweeter than his body, but his soft smile, which has the fragrance of honey, is sweeter still. My dear Sanatan, the sweetness of Krishna's personality is just like an ocean of ambrosia. Ocean of what?
Ambrosia.
Although my mind is now afflicted by convulsive diseases, I wish to drink that entire ocean. The repressive physician does not allow me to drink even one drop. purport, when there is a combination of kapha, pitta, and vayu, the three bodily elements, there occurs sannipati, or a convulsive disease. Lord Chaitanya said, this disease of mine is caused by the personal features of Lord Krishna. The three elements are the beauty of Krishna's body, the beauty of his face, and the beauty of his smile. Stricken by these three beauties, my mind goes into convulsions. It wishes to drink the ocean of Krishna's beauty, but because I am undergoing convulsions, my physician, who is Sri Krishna himself, does not even allow me to take a drop of water from that ocean. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was ecstatic in this way because he was presenting himself in the mood of the gopis. The gopis wanted to drink the ocean of sweetness arising from the bodily features of Krishna, but Krishna did not allow them to come near. Consequently, their desire to meet Krishna increased, and being unable to drink the ambrosia of Krishna's bodily features, they became very unhappy. Krishna's body is a city of attractive features, and it is sweeter than sweet. His face, which is like the moon, is sweeter still, and the supremely sweet, gentle smile on that moonlike face is like rays of moonshine. The beauty of Krishna's smile is the sweetest feature of all. His smile is like a full moon that spreads its rays throughout the three worlds, Goloka Vrindavan, the spiritual sky, and the Vaikunthas, and Devi Dham, the material world. Thus Krishna's shining beauty spreads in all 10 directions. His slight smiling and fragrant illumination are compared to camphor, which enters the sweetness of his lips. That sweetness is transformed and enters into space as vibrations from the holes of his flute. The sound of Krishna's flute spreads in the four directions. Even though Krishna vibrates his flute within this universe, its sound pierces the universal covering and goes to the spiritual sky. Thus the vibration enters the ears of all inhabitants. It especially enters Goloka Vrindavan Dham and attracts the minds of the young damsels of Rajabhumi, bringing them forcibly to where Krishna is present. The vibration of Krishna's flute is very aggressive, and it breaks the vows of all chaste women. Indeed, its vibration takes them forcibly from the laps of their husbands. The vibration of his flute attracts even the goddesses of fortune and the Vaikuntha planets, to say nothing of the poor damsels of Vrindavan. The vibration of his flute slackens the knots of their underwear even in front of their husbands. Thus the gopis are forced to abandon their household duties and come before Krishna. In this way, all social etiquette, shame, and fear are vanquished. The vibration of his flute causes all women to dance. The vibration of his flute is just like a bird that creates a nest within the ears of the gopis and always remains prominent there, not allowing any other sound to enter their ears. Indeed, the gopis cannot hear anything else, nor are they able to concentrate on anything else, not even to give a suitable reply. Such are the effects of the vibration of Lord Krishna's flute. Purport, the vibration of Krishna's flute is always prominent in the ears of the gopis. Naturally, they cannot hear anything else. Constant remembrance of the holy sound of Krishna's flute keeps them enlightened and enlivened, and they do not allow any other sound to enter their ears. Since their attention is fixed on Krishna's flute, they cannot divert their minds to any other subject. In other words, a devotee who has heard the sound of Krishna's flute forgets to talk or hear of any other subject. This vibration of Krishna's flute is represented by the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. A serious devotee of the Lord who chants and hears the transcendental vibration becomes so accustomed to it that he cannot divert his attention to any other subject matter not related to Krishna's blissful characteristics and paraphernalia. That purport was worth the price of admission today. Resuming his external consciousness, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Sanatana Goswami, I have not spoken of what I intended. Lord Krishna is very merciful to you because by bewildering my mind, he has revealed his personal opulence and sweetness. He has caused you to hear all these things from me for your understanding. Purport, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu admitted that he was speaking like a madman, which he should not have done for the understanding of those who are externally situated. Statements about Krishna's body, his characteristics, and his flute would appear like a madman's statements to a mundane person. It was actually a fact that Krishna wanted to reveal himself to Sanatana Goswami due to his specific mercy upon him. Somehow or other, Krishna explained himself and his flute to Sanatana Goswami through the mouth of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who appeared as though mad. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu admitted that he wanted to tell Sanatana something else, but somehow or other, in transcendental ecstasy, he spoke of a different subject matter. Since I have become a madman, I am saying one thing instead of another. This is because I am being carried away by the waves of the nectarian ocean of Krishna's transcendental sweetness. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then remained silent for a moment. Finally, adjusting things within his mind, he again spoke to Sanatana Goswami. If anyone gets an opportunity to hear about the sweetness of Krishna in this chapter of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, he will certainly be eligible to float in the transcendentally blissful ocean of love of God. Praying at the lotus feet of Sri Rupa and Sri Raghunath, always desiring their mercy, I, Krishna Das, narrate Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, following in their footsteps. That was about 5 minutes. Anyway, we completed that whole chapter, and it's important for the times we get together, which is, they're regular, but you know, it's not every day. It's important to get as much in as possible, because all the time it takes you to come all the way over here, sit down, prepare the whole thing, this whole building, you know, we put together just for this purpose. It's an arena of sacrifice. So we try to chunk together as much as possible in one hearing. And hearing a complete chapter like that, like we've all done this morning, is will help us move forward on the spiritual path in a significant way, even though it may not be fully apparent in an immediate sense. It has a medicinal effect, and over time, taking these large doses will also turn one into a strict practitioner, and then eventually a madman like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's inevitable because the potency is there. Om Tat Sat. Sri Sanatana Goswami ki jai, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sankirtan Yajna ki jai. And how about that chanting of the holy name is the hearing the Krishna. Doesn't that make you want to go home and sit down and chant like you've never chanted before? And anyway, what can be said? This is Prabhupada brought us this immortal nectar. Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, hey, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman.